You're listening to an encore edition of Studio Tulsa recorded earlier this year. Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about the unlikely friendship of the two great American writers Ernest Hemingway and John Dos Passos. Both during their lifetimes were referred to as the greatest American writer of their time, first Dos Passos, then Hemingway. The two first met as ambulance drivers during the First World War, and like others of their generation, were intensely shaped by this horrific conflict. But each writer had a diametrically opposed view of war. In fact, the two were opposites in nearly every aspect of personality, belief, and writing style, but both were deeply committed to bringing modernism to American literature. In the years after the war in Paris, as members of the Lost Generation, they became fast friends as they debated the future of literature, read each other's work, and advanced their careers. But by the middle of the 1930s, another war, this time in Spain, drove the two friends apart forever. Biographer James McGrath Morris relates the stories and friendships of these two literary giants in his book, The Ambulance Driver, Hemingway, Dos Passos, and a Friendship Made and Lost in War. It's published by DeCapo Press. Morris is the author of a number of biographies, including the New York Times bestselling Eye on the Struggle, Ethel Payne, the First Lady of the Black Press, and Pulitzer, A Life in Politics, Print, and Power. He joins us today on Studio Tulsa. James, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, glad to be with you.
In your book, The Ambulance Drivers, you portray this relationship between two of the writers that have often been thought as the greatest of the first half of the 20th century. Certainly, John Dos Passos was at the time, he was considered the greatest, and then Hemingway sort of later. And so what interested you in writing about these two writers?
Well, you know, the pairing was really fun. Everyone knows Hemingway, and as you mentioned, Dos Passos was enormously successful and important, but he's very much forgotten today. I mean, when I was working on this book, people would say, Dos who? So pairing these two was really fun from a writing point of view, because you had one was the unknown writer and the other was the well-known writer. And they worked like literary foils, in a sense. One was egocentric, one was not. One was a womanizer, one was not. You know, all these kinds of things. So I had a narrative tale to tell, and that's the first thing a storyteller like myself looks for. But by pairing these two folks, I actually uncovered something I found significant, and I hope readers do too. They both started off their lives at age 18 and 21 as ambulance drivers, volunteer ambulance drivers during World War I. And World War I was a cataclysmic event. It was not like World War II, and it was, in a sense, a needless slaughter of people for 4 or 5 years. And both Hemingway and Dos Passos felt to miss out on seeing this event and witnessing it was to miss out on an event that would be central to their generation. So unlike other writers of their time, for instance, Fitzgerald, they actually witnessed the war and were shaped by the war. And in turn, the war shaped the books they would write. And what so fascinated me about this was that they took very different views of their experience in the war, wrote very different novels, and these were the novels that young Americans would read, the very same young Americans who would march off a few years later to World War II.
Right. And as you mentioned, they had a divergent point of view of life, and their opinions of the war were equally divergent.
Very, very divergent. And part of it was from what they experienced. Dos Passos was a left-winger when he left the United States, a communist sympathizer who was opposed to the war when he arrived in Europe. He still wanted to witness it, and as an ambulance driver, he could do so without actually participating in the killing. But he saw some of the worst parts of the war. He was in a gas attack. Carried bodies through bombing raids. He carried sawed off limbs out of hospital operating rooms. I mean, he really saw the gruesome parts of the war. And in contrast, that when Hemingway arrives and does his service as an ambulance driver in Italy, his service is very brief because he's famously wounded by a mortar attack. And I've talked with some veterans about this, and it's not meant to be in any way disrespectful. But he had, in a sense, the perfect wound. It wasn't going to prevent him from going on to live a full life, but he would return from the war as a wounded, not a soldier, but he often portrayed himself as that, as a wounded individual in which he could talk about and be feted for. And for Hemingway, war was really an inevitability of life. But for him, it brought a test of manlyhood, and he was really overly concerned about manhood and manlyhood, And more importantly, it brought him romance. His first great love affair was with a nurse while he recovered from his wounds. And in fact, the nurse is the basis of his portrayal of Barclay in Farewell to Arms. So these two men had very different takes on the war. As a result, Dos Passos wrote a bitter anti-war novel, and Hemingway wrote A Farewell to Arms, which, while it's not necessarily pro-war, it does reflect that sense of war as an inevitability that attests your manhood, and of course, it brings you love.
Well, now, what's really interesting is, although these guys were as different as night and day, they became friends.
They became friends, and you know that old adage that, you know, successful marriages are when you marry people who are different than you or opposites. It's very true for writers like these two. They shared a conviction, and the conviction was that the war had so changed life that the old ways of expression, the Victorian age of writing, was gone, that they needed to forge a new style of writing. Hemingway, of course, famously does so and changes writing forever. And what people have forgotten is that he isn't alone. I mean, Dos Passos is doing the same sort of thing. It's just that we tend to have forgotten him. I draw the comparison to Cubists. And, you know, if you go into a museum and you see Cubist paintings, it isn't just Picasso who's the most famous of that group. There are lots of others.
Braque and Wangri and all, yes.
Yeah. So Dos Passos and Hemingway were part of a larger revolution. They were the two leading members of it. And Dos Passos was involved in doing enormously creative and unusual forms of writing. The problem for the modern reader, because I get this every time I go to a bookstore, everybody says, well, what Dos Passos book should I read? They're very hard to read today, whereas Hemingway remains very accessible. I think it's more like if you were to go into a museum in Oklahoma and see some of these paintings or see Seurat paintings or Dalis or whatever you want, you might say, wow, that's amazing. I can see how that changed everything. But I'm not sure I want it hanging above my sofa. That's the fate, in a sense, that Dos Passos suffers. Anyone who reads his works can see how significant his use of, like, film cut, jump cuts, his use of nonfiction wrapped in fiction, the kind of earthiness of his writing are all very radical and new. But they're not very accessible today. They're more like artifacts. Whereas you give a kid The Old Man and the Sea, and it's hard for them to put it down.
Right. Now, in the book, the ambulance drivers, they both were ambulance drivers, and both for a time in Italy.
Yeah.
And they actually met, but they really didn't know each other then.
No, but you know, these are two young kids, neither of whom said to each other, hey, you're going to become a famous writer someday. It's their recollection in 24, they started talking much the way you and I might if we met at some conference. Didn't we meet back in, you know, that kind of thing? Yeah. So the meeting itself didn't have great significance, but it did allow me as a writer to be able to weave the tale of how these two men came together. And it's really their plot in 24, when Dos Passos is the famous and successful writer. Hemingway at this point is stringing for a newspaper in Canada, living off his wife's trust fund, or using money from it, I shouldn't say living off of it, and trying to get published. And Dos Passos is already the successful writer who's helping him at that point. And I love that because it allowed readers to start thinking things all over again. Who is this Dos Passos guy, and why don't we remember him, and that sort of thing. And then the friendship, of course, involved more than just their professional friendship. Dos Passos ends up marrying the girlfriend that Hemingway had vigorously pursued as a young man. They love the same places. Dos Passos is actually the one who had been to Spain first. Dos Passos was the one who went to Key West first. So geography, women, and writing really united these men in a way that Hemingway never really ever had a friendship to compare to the one he had with Dos Passos.
And of course, as it becomes very apparent, you know, Hemingway is so self-assured, overconfidence, you know, just overflowing. And so what's interesting is you write, Hemingway, while being very much the junior partner as far as reputation and even mentorship, sort of assumes the senior partner mantle.
He does very early on. He has a bravado, a sense of, and a lot of it has to do with his physicality. I mean, look, this is some of the things that's so much fun about spending a couple years with you. What struck me about it is the guy was just incredibly handsome. You know, you've been in a situation where a man or a woman, it doesn't matter which, has a look that when they walk in, everybody notices. Hemingway was that, and he knew that power, and he carried it on to writing and to everything else he did in life. So he did have a sense of bravado, but he was deeply insecure. And he had, this is a classic writer's problem. Every writer suffers from envy, trust me. You know, even if you're successful, you look at somebody else and wonder why their books are in stacks of 12 and yours only in stacks of 5, or why, you know, you're on this show and no one else, you know, those kinds of things. Well, when Hemingway was incredibly financially successful in the 30s, what bugged him was that Dos Passos was still regarded by the critics as the literary member of the group, the one who was writing the books for the ages. And it was Dos Passos who appeared on the cover of Time magazine first, to Hemingway's annoyance. And this is part of the things that really poisoned their friendship, was that envy got to be too much for Hemingway.
One of his first published efforts was a very thin volume, Hemingway.
Oh, yeah.
And he's looking at Dos Passos' Three Soldiers, which was his first great success, Dos Passos' great success, and says, you know, says, I need to thicken this up. Look at Three Soldiers. There's 8 pages of blank paper.
You're such a close reader. It was one of my favorite little bits of discovery, that the guy was sitting in his apartment in Paris counting the number of blank pages in the front of Dos Passos' book and urging his publisher to do the same.
Well, it sounds like reading the book, it sounds like you found a lot of moments like this.
I did, and it was really fun. I can't say that I uncovered, except for one photograph that's kind of daring, anything dramatically new about Hemingway. But what I think I've done is given a chance for people to see these men in a different light, to bring back from the past. I mean, George Parker famously wrote in The New Yorker that when people look back at that era, they think of the 3 great writers, Faulkner, Hemingway, and Fitzgerald, and they forget that it was actually a quartet, and Dos Passos was the 4th member. And I think his tale tends to enliven the tale of Hemingway and give at least Hemingway readers a new look at the guy they like so much.
Now, when you're talking about the photographic discoveries, is this the Key West photos of Hemingway?
Yeah, it's one of these wonderful things of censorship. I found a photograph in somebody's memoir of Hemingway wearing what we would describe as a Speedo today on the beach of Key West. Turns out the publisher was so uncomfortable with the fact that he wasn't wearing a Speedo. He had a little object hiding the part that you might not want to reveal in public, that the publisher drew in a Speedo. And so both versions appear in my book.
So during the war, they met each other briefly at a camp for the ambulance drivers.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, Dos Passos was in France first before Italy. He was behind the lines in Verdun, which, of course, was a horrific killing fields.
Yeah.
A young man then, he sort of grew up. I think there's a quote in the book about how maybe it was Hemingway saying this, that, you know, Dos Passos was a boy in France, and in his second stint as being an ambulance driver, he became a man.
Yeah, I think it's true.
Yeah, and he was the older guy there in Italy. But eventually they came to know each other in the early 20s, and seemingly it was a good friendship.
It was a very good friendship, and I say this in public. I can't use it in the book because it's an anachronistic term, but it's really a bromance. I mean, they were emotionally dependent on each other. They waited for each other to read their manuscripts. They had sensibilities that were very similar, and they also had a great time together. And one of the tragedies of Hemingway, and this is where I think we become empathetic to Hemingway, is that whatever the reasons being, whether it was his mother or the war or shell shock or whatever it could be, he ended up basically destroying everything that was, every friendship, every valuable thing he had acquired in life, including his friendship with Dos Passos. And it was really very sad. I mean, I was quite weepy trying to write those last pages about how these guys broke up.
It's interesting, you know, you see how Hemingway was formed, and we see this great insecurity, but really, if anybody had an occasion to be insecure, it was Dos Passos. I mean, you sort of understand his flirtation with socialism and communism. You know, he's the son of an illegitimate son of an industry titan. He's a trust lawyer
yeah.
who even refuses to acknowledge his son, even after he married his mother later in life, for at least for the first couple of years.
Yeah, I think there are different kinds of insecurities. As an artist, Dos Passos was always insecure about his work, but he lost himself to his work. I mean, when his books were published, he famously left the country, so he wouldn't, in those days there was no internet, so if he could get to Morocco, he wouldn't have to read the reviews. So he fled in that sense. But there are different kinds of insecurities. I think Dos Passos was quite secure about himself. He was shy and humble, but had a good sense of himself. I think Hemingway was the one who was beset with devils, including a kind of just general insecurity, which, you know, this is a man whose father ends his own life, and Hemingway's going to end his own life. These are deeply seated insecurities that, that prompt them, drive them, and they're different.
My guest today is James McGrath Morse. He's a biographer and author, and his latest biography is The Ambulance Drivers, Hemingway, Dos Passos, and A Friendship Made and Lost in War. It's published by DeCapo Press. We mentioned that the friendship really was not made during World War I, but that was their first acquaintance. They became friends in Paris and in the south of France and in Spain and all sorts of very glamorous places.
Yeah, Key West, Idaho, all kinds of Montana, I mean, all kinds of places.
You know, what's really interesting, though, is in detailing Dos Passos' early life, where he was just sort of traveling around, it's like you forget how small a world it was even in the 1920s and 19-teens. You know, he has a stint in Baghdad, and he meets Gertrude Bell, a famous spy.
Well, it was a small world because travel was limited to those who had means. And if you had means, and it didn't take too much, but if you had means, you could go to Baghdad, and you'd end up being in the same hotel as other people. Today, if you were to do that, those very famous people would be cordoned off. You wouldn't be likely to sit and have a cigar with somebody of that type. But the world of literature, and at that time, few books were published, few authors existed, it was a smaller world, and you tended to meet each other in a way that you don't today.
What's interesting is, as you mentioned, this relationship beginning to turn, maybe one of the first circumstances of it is John Dos Passos is a firm backer of Sacco and Vanzetti.
Yeah.
And he makes this a cause in his life to keep these two accused anarchists of being executed. And he asked Ernest Hemingway to join in as a, you know, lend his name to this. And Hemingway rebuffs him.
Yeah, there's a real difference. I mean, Hemingway sees his job as an artist, in a sense, to represent the world. And Dos Passos believed that he should use his writing to change the world. And so Dos Passos was continually disappointed by Edmund Wilson and Ernest Hemingway and others who wouldn't rush to join him on these causes of enormous injustice. I mean, the Sacco and Vanzetti case really crystallized things for a lot of Americans. It was like O.J. Simpson. You had an opinion on it. No one was without an opinion on it. And I think Dos Passos was disappointed by his friends. That, again, was one of the things that began to create a problem between Hemingway and Dos Passos later in their friendship. And Hemingway finally does end up become politically active and ends up joining the same causes that Dos Passos had begged him to join at the very moment that Dos Passos has begun to change his mind about left-wing politics and supporting communism and has begun to turn to the conservative side, which irritates Hemingway no end. He says, you know, you've dragged me all the way here to Spain to support the Republican cause in the Civil War, and you are moving away from the cause. So, you know, again, another fracture of their friendship.
How much does Dos Passos' wife play a role in this? You mentioned it was...
It's unclear as to what she does in terms of politics. Dos Passos' conversion from left to right makes an enormous amount of sense if you spend time studying his beliefs about liberty and freedom. In a sense, instead of looking at it as putting your arms out and having the left be all the way at the tip of your fingers and the right being at the tip of your other fingers, if you raise them up into a circle, it's more like you jump from one to the other at the end point where they both have a lot of agreement on fundamental liberties. Katie Smith was I don't even want to dismiss his second wife because he loved her dearly, but was the great love of his life. She's killed in a car accident in 1947, of which he felt responsible. And she was a partner that I think would have gone along with anything he did. So, every once in a while people say, well, was it because of her that he became more conservative? I never found any evidence of that. Mm-hmm. I think it was purely an intellectual journey. He was highly motivated by thought rather than matters of the heart, whereas Hemingway was much more emotional and much more heart-driven in that sense.
So what about driving a wedge between the two writers?
Oh, it certainly did. I mean, not only, I mean, both things did. Kate Smith certainly drove a wedge in the sense that she had been the adolescent ideal for Hemingway. I mean, she was older than he, and please note that Hemingway married older women, usually about 7 years older than he. And so the idea that the man who's getting all this critical claim, who's his, in a sense, rival in the bookstore, wins the heart of the girl he'd always wanted was very problematic. Secondly, Hemingway had left Hadley and married Pauline. Hadley and Pauline were both friends of Kate Smith. And then when he was with Martha Gellhorn and Dos Passos shows up in Spain, these are reminders of his previous wives. I mean, Kate Smith and Dos Passos reminded him of Hemingway's allegiance to his first two wives. And that's kind of an awkward situation when you're standing there with your arm around your third wife. So all of these things became, in a sense, baggage and difficult for him.
But you write the Spanish Civil War was where these two writers fell out.
Yeah.
Dos Passos went as an idealist, believing in the cause of the Republicans, as they were called. Ernest Hemingway also came to the cause, but knowing Hemingway's personality, you have to feel at least part of it was just a way to prove himself as a man and be a part of the conflict.
No, you're really right. It's a very much a bravado appearance. You know, he's the one who rushes foolishly into battle because he wants to be there. He wants to smell the gun smoke and all of those kinds of things. He doesn't, in a sense, have the same sense of war that Dos Passos got from World War One. But they both, you know, even when Dos Passos turns against Hemingway, they both still believe in the Republic. They both believe in democracy and want Franco not to take over Spain as a dictatorship. But I think Hemingway got more out of it for himself than Dos Passos was. Dos Passos was going there to support the cause. Hemingway had a dual agenda. One was to support the cause, but secondly, to support the cause of Hemingway.
And out of that came For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Well, yeah, exactly, which is an excellent novel.
So what began to change Dos Passos' views?
Well, a number of things. Dos Passos began, you know, if you're in a ward meeting somewhere in Oklahoma, people often talk about the means and the ends to get some legislation passed or something. And maybe we need to do this particularly nasty thing because in the end we'll win this thing. The ends justify the means. Well, that's a debate that Dos Passos had where he ended up believing that politics was all means and no ends. And so you could never do something for the end. And what happened specifically was his very old friend that he'd known since he was a teenager, a Spanish man named Robles, who had translated his books, was killed with no due process by the communists who were supporting the Republican cause in Spain. And he was very bitter about that, and his turned to his good friend Hemingway, who basically dismissed it as the cost of war, and was upset that Dos Passos kept looking into the death because he thought it would undermine the efforts to support the Republican government, because it would be, in a sense, dirty laundry. So I think Dos Passos was very hurt that his best friend didn't take into account that he'd lost Robles, who was a truly important friend to him. And I think that callousness did it. But the other thing is, like many, you know, they were called fellow travelers, people who supported communism back then. And there were many of them. And, you know, during the Depression, if you weren't sympathetic to communism, you may be not empathetic to the world. I mean, it made sense to be supportive of some of their causes. Then we learned about Stalin, and that's the kind of thing Dos Passos was beginning to learn about all the crimes that had been committed in the name of communism, and his belief that the means were as important as the end. In fact, politics was all means, combined with the death of his friend, helped him turn against leftist causes because he felt they were being callous, and they were going to maybe win, but what they would win wouldn't be worth it in the end.
And how did this break over this political issue break the friendship?
Oh, it was awful because Hemingway accused Dos Passos of, in a sense, being a traitor to the cause and said he would ruin him when he goes back to the United States. But all of this was, you know, in a sense, the straw that broke the relationship. You had the envy. You had the marrying of Katie Smith. You had the money issue. Hemingway would lend money to Dos Passos. That made Dos Passos feel dependent on Hemingway. All of these things combined together so that when Robles was killed in the Spanish Civil War, that was the thing that triggered the wrath. It's much like a marital argument where you have 15 things you've held in for years, and then suddenly somebody breaks a dish, and that's what you argue about. So it wasn't the events of that particular time. This friendship was headed for a dramatic collapse based on lots of things at that time. And that was also a pattern. Hemingway ended up, you know, breaking up with Hadley, breaking up with Pauline, breaking up with Gellhorn, breaking up with Donald Stewart. I mean, everybody who got close to him ended up being a target of Hemingway's wrath. And when he got angry, he said things and did things that were so inexcusable that it might take years to recover. And that's what happened.
Well,
and they never did recover.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is that, you know, he's had his own success, and these have been incredibly popular successes. Dos Passos still has these successes that are more critical successes than mass appeal. But it, really, they're both at their height at this particular point. I mean, John Dos Passos is writing the USA trilogy. I guess at that point, Hemingway is
working For Whom the Bell Tolls.
For Whom the Bell and To Have and Have Not. Yep. I mean, you know, these are really important books in his output, and yet they have this severing of this friendship.
Yeah, they both in their moments of clarity realize what they've lost. In the afterwards of the book, I talk about in the years, the decade afterwards, the small attempts they had to make up and or whatever the expression, kiss and make up. Yeah. They actually meet for a very brief time in Cuba. They write some letters to each other. And in a way, Hemingway, by 1949, which is now 12 years afterwards, writes a letter in which he basically says, you know, I got it. He doesn't say I blew it. He says we blew it. And they both have little sentences and letters about how great it would be to be back in Paris sipping wine. But, you know, a breakup is a breakup, and they're hard to put back the pieces back together.
What was the most interesting thing to write about in the relationship? You know, so much has been written about the lost generation in Paris, but it seems like describing that era was something of great interest to you.
It was, and it was also an unromanticizing of it. I mean, I loved Woody Allen's movie Midnight in Paris, but, you know, the reason Americans flowered there was, in a sense, a cruelty to the French. Paris was destitute at the time. No one had any money, and American dollars went very far, so these artists came over there, and for a few dollars they could get an apartment, hire themselves a maid, drink into oblivion. And so in many respects, they were taking advantage of the poverty of Paris. So it was a very different kind of Paris than I had always thought it was. But it was a very creative moment, and it was an extraordinary moment because whether they were painters, composers, or writers, they were all searching for a new way to express themselves, much as people are today. I mean, with Twitter and the Internet changing the way we communicate, there are people out there struggling with this, and that's what they were struggling with. But for me, I think the most interesting thing was coming to understand that they jointly were working on this revolution, that their work shared more things in common than differences, and that their books went out into the world as emissaries of these very different views of the war. And of course, you know, you'd have to go to a used bookstore today to find Three Soldiers, Dos Passos' famous book about the war. And Hemingway's books are all over the place. And I think part of the reason is that the 20th century became a century of war that we've all grown to accept, much like Hemingway believed that war was inevitable. And I think our sense that we can't change things makes Dos Passos' view seem romantic and furtive and impossible to achieve.
Hmm. The name of the book is The Ambulance Drivers. James, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it was an immense pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
James McGrath Morris is the author of The Ambulance Drivers, Hemingway, Dos Passos, and A Friendship Made and Lost in War. It's published by DaCapo Press. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.